Now we're at 68. ESPN 93.5. Sunny 95.3.
Well, on Friday mornings, we get with political humorist and satirist Bill Melberg and Evening with the Presidents.com, a U of I alum, our friend Bill in Chicago. Good morning, Bill.
Hello, Stevie. Hello, Diane.
Hello.
And good morning, ESPN Radio and Sunny listeners.
Bill, it is August. Congressmen and senators are leaving Washington for their August recess, heading back to their home states. President Obama and his family getting ready to take yet another vacation, their sixth this year. Martha's Vineyard, at taxpayer expense, of course. And many other Americans are taking their summer vacations before the kids head back to school.
Yes, Stevie and Diane, it's those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer.
Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Dust off the sun and moon and sing a song of cheer.
All right, well. Bill, since our politicians are taking a break, why don't we take a break and put aside our usual political discussions to talk a bit about humor? Who were some of the comedians who influenced your sense of humor, Bill, and who made you laugh when you were a kid?
Well, that's a good question, Stevie, and I must confess I've always had a thing for political humor. Even as a kid, I was into politics and humor. And when I was young, the great comedian Bob Hope was known for his political one-liners. And here's an example from Bob Hope's 1940 film, Ghostbreakers, not Ghostbusters,
yeah.
Ghostbreakers. And I think this line is still funny more than 70 years later. Let's take a listen.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
How horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
You mean like Democrats? Yes, I know some Republicans who'd still get a kick out of that line. I remember Bob Hope performing in the Assembly Hall, the State Farm Center back in 1990. Bob was 87 years old at the
Isn't
time.
Isn't that wild?
Well, he gave quite a performance that night.
And Bill, who were some of the other comedians you enjoyed as a kid?
Well, Diane, when I was in high school and college, 100 years ago, a fellow named W.C. Fields was rediscovered by my generation, and part of his appeal was his very unique voice and speaking style. But W.C. Fields' main appeal was the irreverent humor in his films. And here's an example from his 1933 movie, The Pharmacist.
Did I interest you in a stamp?
Yeah, give me a stamp. No, give me a purple one.
Oh, I'm sorry we haven't any purple ones. I could paint one for you.
I don't want a painted one. Person hasn't got any rights in this country anymore. The government even tells you what color stamps you gotta buy.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
That's the Democratic Party for you.
I've written to Washington about it.
What do you want to write to Washington for? He's dead. How much are your stamps?
3 cents.
All right, give me one.
Oh, thank you.
No, don't give me that dirty one. Give me a clean one. Give me the one out of the middle.
Well, that film was made about 80 years ago, and people are still saying the same things about big government controlling our lives today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they are, Diane. And after Obamacare kicks in a few months from now, they'll probably be complaining about big government even more. Meanwhile, I should tell you that the comedian who probably had the greatest influence on me when I was developing my own comic skills in high school and college was Jack Benny, a fellow who got his start in radio in the 1930s, then went on to television in the 1950s and 1960s. And in real life, Jack Benny was a very generous man, but he played a cheap, penny-pinching, money-loving tightwad on his radio and television programs, and that's why this little clip from Jack Benny's radio show in 1949 or 48 got such a big laugh. Let's listen.
Hey, Bud. Bud.
Huh?
Got a match?
Match? Yes, I have one right here.
Don't make a move. This is a stick-up.
What?
You heard me.
Mister. Mister, put down that gun.
Shut up. Now, come on. Your money or your life? Look, Bud. I said your money or your life. I'm thinking it over.
That's such a classic line. I'm thinking it over. Great line.
Yes. Yeah. That was a definite comedy classic. and here's another one from my favorite comedy team when I was a kid, Laurel and Hardy, as they talked about how to be successful in business.
For the first time in our lives, we're a success. A nice little fish business and making money.
You know, Ollie, I've been thinking.
What about?
I know how we could make a lot more money.
How?
Well, if we caught our own fish, we wouldn't have to pay for it. Then whoever we sold it to, it'd be clear profit.
Tell me that again.
Well, if you caught a fish, and whoever you sold it to, they wouldn't have to pay for it. Then the profits would to go to the fish.
I know exactly what you mean. Your idea is to eliminate the middleman.
Classic Laurel and Hardy. Speaking of success and business, Bill, I know this next clip is another one of your favorite comedy routines.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there. If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. The internet didn't get invented on its own.
Yes. Yes, that routine would be really funny if it weren't for the fact that President Obama was really serious when he said it.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, President Obama could use a few laughs himself, given all the scandals that have been plaguing his administration in recent months. And here's a fellow who had a very big influence on my humor and on my voice impersonations when I was a college kid at University of Illinois 40 years ago. This is David Frye imitating another scandal-ridden president, Richard Nixon.
When top Nixon aides started singing to the feds, the Watergate scandal splashed across the headlines. In a desperate effort to stay afloat, Nixon went before the American people to state his case on national television.
It's almost their time, Mr. President.
Thank you, aide.
You're on, Mr. President.
My fellow Americans, I come before you tonight to tell you the truth. I first learned of the Watergate break-in when I read newspaper reports the following morning. I was appalled at this senseless, illegal action. Therefore, I have the following announcement to make. Today I have regretfully been forced to accept the resignation of 1,541 of the finest public servants. It has been my privilege to know. As the man in charge, I of course accept full responsibility, but not the blame. Let me explain the difference. People who are to blame lose their jobs. People who are responsible do not.
Oh, that's a good line. David Fry, many, many years ago, I accept the responsibility, but not the blame. Yeah, Barack Obama.
Kind of what Obama said.
Well, Barack Obama does sound a bit like Richard Nixon when he talks about the IRS scandal, the NSA scandal, the Benghazi scandal, and all the other scandals that have been plaguing the Obama White House. And on that note, we must bring this first segment to a close. But when we come back, my friends, Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy will be giving us a timely reminder that Christmas is less than 5 months away. Stay tuned. It's ESPN 93.5 and the new Sunny 95.3. It's ESPN and Sunny. We're back with political humorist Bill Melberg in Chicago. Bill, Christmas is less than 5 months away.
Yes, it is, Stevie and Diane, and it's never too soon to start addressing your Christmas cards. And what should the message be on those cards? Well, here are some sample verses as offered by the Laurel and Hardy Christmas Card Company.
Good morning, sir. We're taking orders for Christmas cards. I designed them myself, and my partner, Mr. Laurel, wrote the beautiful verse.
Swell.
May I read you one?
Read them.
Thank you, sir. 'Twas Christmas Day in the poorhouse, and the boys were feeling blue. The boys in gray were fighting. A Merry Christmas to you.
And a Happy New Year to you.
We have one here, especially for the ladies. Jingle bells coming through the rye. I wish you a Merry Christmas, even as you and I.
It took the very words out of my mouth.
What's the matter with it?
No sentiment.
Ask if he's got a mother. That Jenny gets him.
You ask him.
Did you ever have a mother?
Oh. Now you hit me.
That's fine. We have one here dedicated to mothers. May I read it to you?
Read it.
Merry Christmas, Mother. Merry Christmas, Ma. Hi, Mommy, Mommy, and the hot cha-cha.
A beautiful thought. I'll take one.
Christmas will be here sooner than we think, Bill.
Yes. Yes, the days are getting shorter. So enjoy these last lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer while you can.
And one last thing before we go, Bill. You mentioned that Jack Benny was your favorite comedian as a kid, and I know you emceed your high school variety show as Jack Benny, Mr. Benny being one of your best impersonations. But did you tell me that you met Jack Benny and did your impersonation for him about 40 years ago?
Well...
40 years ago you did this in front of Jack Benny?
Well, yes, I did. And that was at the old Mill Run Theater in Niles, Illinois. And it was just I was about 20 years old. It was a couple years after I portrayed him in our high school variety show. And I met Mr. Benny backstage after his performance and had him autograph a picture of me as him playing a violin in our variety show.
And what did he think of your impersonation?
Well, he listened to me. I did a little bit of Jack Benny, and he said, "Gee, that's good, kid. Real good. Keep up the good work."
That's awesome.
And we had a pleasant chat.
I never told you, did I, that I interviewed George Burns a long, long time ago?
I don't think you did tell me that.
Yes. He told me a Jack Benny story. He said that, you know, he and Jack were about the same, I guess, contemporaries, but Jack had gone to the studio and George Burns is waiting for him to come back and tell him how it went. And, you know, apparently it went very, very well, and he had signed for $2.4 million, and back in the day, that was just a fortune.
Oh.
And so he came in, and he wasn't talking about the money. He was saying, do you know, George, that if you drive 30 miles an hour, you can hit all the lights in Hollywood? And George Burns, you could never get over the fact that that's what he was talking about, hitting all the lights in Hollywood.
You know, in the movie The Sunshine Boys,
yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, Jack Benny was supposed to be opposite Walter Matthau.
No.
And unfortunately, he got ill and wasn't able to do it
yeah.
and died. So George Burns took his place. And, of course, that started a whole new career
right.
for George Burns at about 80 years of age.
Didn't know that. Hey, Bill, I appreciate you, buddy. We'll talk next week.
Oski wow wow, guys.
Way to go. Wanted to kind of take a peek into Bill's past.
That's right.
Bill Melbrook.
Some influences.
Yeah, and eveningwiththepresidents.com. Hey, Diane, have a great weekend.
Enjoy the weekend.
I'll meet you guys back Monday morning on the radio. Thank you for listening. ESPN Next with The Herd on 93.5. And I'll be hanging around playing some soft rock favorites on the sunny side. Listen, thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
Teamsters Union 26 is a...